thanks to our sponsor, Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 358, where today CJ and I are going to talk about Microsoft smashing the Q2 results, Microsoft 365 news, and Azure latest news, recorded live April the 30th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #ShiftHappens. That's one word. Shift Happens, wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe today. Back to the show. Good morning, CJ. How's it going today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I've had a good week, very productive, learned some stuff, had some fun playing with some new tech. Yeah, it's a lot of
awesome.
I've been diving into GitHub Actions a lot more this past week. I'm recording a new class, a new chapter for my course.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was all going to be about CI and CD. One of two DevOps chapters for my course, and this one's about CI and CD, and it was going to be just about Azure DevOps pipelines, but GitHub Actions have become more popular or have gotten more full-featured lately. I don't know. I mean, it kind of feels like Azure DevOps has kind of had, I don't want to say a feature freeze, but it doesn't look like it's got a lot of momentum in it. But GitHub Actions has gotten a lot of momentum lately, and so I don't know if there's something changing there, but it's like, this will be fun. Let's just go play with something new. And I really like what they've done with GitHub Actions. There's a lot of gaps, but it's really, really cool. It's very easy to step outside the box and build something custom.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I'll have to take a look at it. I mean, I'm aware that they launched it and it's been available for a while, but honestly, I have not played with it. So you've motivated me to go take a look. And I think you're going to switch our website CI/CD pipe over to it, right? So that'll give me a good motivation to go check out how it's done.
Exactly, yeah. So we use GitHub DevOps to publish our Hugo site or build and publish it to our static site in Azure. And I do the same thing for my personal blog on Hugo, and I'm standing up another Hugo site. I think I'm going to end up redoing the Voitanos public site, not the membership stuff, but the public site, take it out of the platform it's currently in and put it over in Hugo just because it's easier to maintain, easier to manage, and a hell of a lot faster. And this morning I was like, well, I wonder how hard it would be to set up an action to, or set up a GitHub workflow to build it and publish it to a static site. And I was able to, I already had the site kind of built and working as I'm going through the theme. It took me about 25 minutes to start from scratch and deploy it. There's some pre-built actions that people have already created, but I just went through and did everything like command line based, and it was super easy, man. It's quick and everything's in the repo. Yeah. They've done a good job with it. There's some things that they don't have done. Like, it would be nice to have, like with Azure DevOps, you can publish the test results file, like the JUnit file and the code coverage results file. Those two data files, you can publish them as first class artifacts to Azure DevOps. And they give you a cool little rendering of those things in their in the pipeline execution. GitHub Actions doesn't have that, but you can still save those files. So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
I will set it up and blog about it. I learned something else this week that I know you have a MacBook, so this may actually affect you as well.
Oh, I know what you're looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found this too. It's fascinating.
It is. I've been struggling with trying to set up our stuff for doing some live streaming stuff. My machine has been like chugging away. And I've got my MacBook, it's the all USB-C setup. So I have one cable, one USB-C cable going into a Thunderbolt 3 dock that powers both my monitors, the recorder that we got for the microphone, and a bunch of other devices. So everything's going through one, plus it charges my laptop. I come to find out that if you take power off of that bus and you move the power charging to a different bus, like if you have power cable coming in from the right side and then all of your devices connecting in from the left side, it's a significant drop in performance.
Yeah, this blew my mind when I read it, right? Basically, it turns out that charging your MacBook Pro will cause it to run hot or show, and therefore show, you know, because you're charging, right? You're sucking in a whole bunch of power. But the interesting bit, so that part's not a surprise. The interesting bit is that you end up with like a high percentage of CPU use for a thing called kernel task on your machine. And everybody's like, why is kernel task going crazy? If you unplug the power cable from, I think it's the left side of your laptop, you'll get this high CPU use. But if you charge it using a port on the right side, it'll drop in usage and you won't have this high CPU use and your fan will slow down and all that sort of stuff. And I was just like, what the? Turns out, would you want to share how it, what the reasoning for this is? Did you read the ins and outs of exactly how it happened?
I did a couple of days ago. I forget off the top of my head. Why don't you share?
There's a temperature sensor near, on the left-hand side, there's a sensor on that side which measures temperature. And so it turns out when you're charging, that temperature sensor is getting triggered. And there's something to do with that sensor and that CPU task is causing it to go to 100%. And then it will reduce the clock speed or something along those lines. And so your laptop ends up going slower.
I was actually having the problem with my laptop where I was doing something with video recording and a couple other things. And I've got I use a thing called iStatMenu that sits in my menu bar on my MacBook and it shows the CPU going. And it was just, my machine was going slow. The CPU was clearly pegged. It was hot. The fans were going. And I was like, what the hell's going on? And I couldn't figure out like what to shut down to get it to stop doing that. And this article, I had actually stumbled across that this morning. So I'm like, well, let me get out my power cable for my MacBook and plug it in on the right side instead of using it on the left side. And sure enough, it just all of a sudden the CPU just plummeted. I've noticed my machine has run so much cleaner in the last few days.
Yeah.
So go figure.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So charge from the right-hand side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's the link that we'll put is to a Stack Exchange post with a guy that did a fantastic explanation, including charts and stuff. And if you look at, just go to the link and then just scroll down to the chart and you can see where he's like, here it is plugged in the left side. And then here's when I unplugged it. And then here's when I did nothing. And you notice that simply having the power plugged in on the left side spikes the CPU around 75%, cutting it and dropping it over to the right side, even still leaving all the peripherals plugged in on the left side, the CPU just plummets down below 10%. So
yeah, apparently it's called the Thunderbolt left proximity temperature.
There you go.
That goes up when it's charging, and that somehow is interfering with the kernel task process, or kernel task process is having a hard time with that. Nobody, I don't think anybody knows why it's having a hard time with it. Like you'd have to, they say in this answer, you have to attach like a kernel debugger and really find out why it's freaking out about it. But that seems to be the cause.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things that we found the problem. We found a solution. Exact the root of the problem. I don't really care.
Find another problem.
Yeah.
Fix it.
Move on to another problem. Fix that one too. Move on.
Fix the problem.
Until they're all fixed. It's a great video.
Brilliant. I love that video.
All right. Okay. We got a bunch of Microsoft-related news today, so why don't we dive into this?
Sounds good.
This episode is sponsored by ShareGate. As fans of the Microsoft Cloud Show, we'd like to think that whenever you have questions about Azure management or governance, you turn to us, or at least other cloud professionals like us. Our friends at ShareGate agree that when users connect directly with experts, the whole Azure community benefits. That's why on May the 7th, ShareGate is hosting Deploy, a free online event where they'll be bringing 8 well-known cloud professionals directly to you, wherever you may be. Over the day, these experts will provide practical advice and to help you improve your Azure governance tactics. To learn more about Deploy or to save your spot, visit ShareGate.com/deploy. That's ShareGate.com/deploy. And now, back to the show. All right, Mr. Johnson, this was a bit of a surprise to me, but yesterday, was it yesterday or 2 days ago? It was really yesterday-ish. Microsoft announced their Q2 results. So this was on April the 29th is when they announced
Yes.
They announced their Q2 results. And there were a couple things here that were surprising. And let me give you just my bit on this, and then I'd love to get your take on it, because you do a better job at kind of looking into these numbers than I do. Not only did they beat what the street was expecting them to do on their estimates, sales jumped 15%. The growth from Azure Cloud slowed to just 59%. Mm-hmm. Stock skyrocketed or jumped up as well by another 4 points off, jumped up, and now it's just less than 4 points off of its high back in February, which says quite a bit for what the market went through in March.
Yeah.
But I thought the part that was also interesting, and this is kind of a double-edged sword. This is a kind of a one shoe, and then we'll see what the other shoe does a little bit later. But they said that the coronavirus has had a minimal impact on their revenue. But then again, their Q2 numbers that just finished, so it finished at the end of March.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of saying that, well, we have to wait and see what this impact is really going to have. I mean, we've seen, you know, the economy in the United States has contracted by 4%, but the most it's ever had since the Great Depression. And we have unemployment. I think I saw this morning was somewhere around 12 or 13% is what unemployment is right now. So even though those things are happening right now, Microsoft may not see the effects of this. I guess we don't technically know we're in a recession until you're 6 months into it, but I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion what everyone's kind of saying. Yeah, we're going to be in a recession.
Yeah. This blew my mind, right? Like, this would be a great result in the best of times. And they've just absolutely smashed it. And I agree. I don't think the full effects of what's going on in the world right now are really reflected in this quarterly result. A lot of this is reflective of what has happened already, you know, prior to COVID and everything. But, you know, I saw an article or an interview with Bill Gates yesterday where the interviewer asked him, you know, they were talking a lot about this pandemic and things, and unfortunately, they didn't ask him, did you cause it, which I was waiting for, which I thought was quite funny, given the tinfoil hat wearing weirdos out there that think Bill Gates, 500,000 of them apparently have signed a petition saying Bill Gates is orchestrating this whole thing, which I thought was comical.
Yeah.
I was really disappointed the interviewer didn't ask him that, because I think he just would have burst out laughing.
Yeah.
But the interviewer did ask him, you know, what do you expect the impact of this to be on, you know, your former company, Microsoft? You know, he has to be very careful around this, right? Because he's only just resigned his board seat on Microsoft not long ago. And I don't even know if he's vacated that position yet. But he was very careful about giving, you know, financial guidance on the company's performance, but he sort of generalized it as, you know, there are a lot of companies in the tech sector that will be minimally affected, right? The world runs on technology these days, and they'll still need it regardless of this. And he said, you know, there'll probably be a dip, right, as businesses go out of business and don't need those licenses anymore. But he said, on the whole, like, the tech sector is in pretty good shape, which I thought was, you know, it seemed pretty reasonable and things. So this result from Microsoft, though, like, next quarter will be the really telling one for this pandemic. But man, they smashed it this quarter. Like, the productivity and business processes unit, which includes Dynamics, LinkedIn, and Office, up 14.7%. And that's on $11.74 billion for the quarter. Right? We're not just like 14%. You're like, oh, that's not a lot of percent. Like, rah, rah, rah. Cool. But try doing that on a over $10 billion business. Like, that is a phenomenal result.
Mm-hmm.
Some other bits and pieces they had here were 39.6 million consumer subscribers, right? So that's Mars and Pars and students and all that buying Office 365 subscriptions, which is pretty amazing. That's up 16%. And Teams communication app has 75 million daily active users is the number they gave, up from 44 million in mid-March.
Wow.
Right?
So get this. I had heard
mid-March was only like a month and a half ago.
That was about a week into it. I had talked to another company recently who remained nameless, but I heard something like their Teams usage went from, I think they said like 6 million minutes a day or 7 million minutes a day, to now their meetings minutes has gone up to 63 million minutes, something like that. Just it's crazy. There's the link that I have in the show notes about for the quarterly earnings. It's from CNBC, and they have a nice little chart right in the middle of it that shows the percentage growth in each one of their different product businesses from each quarter. And for the most part, it looks, you know, from the previous quarters, everything looks pretty consistent which is what's impressive. I mean, yeah, the numbers are good, but every quarter they've had good numbers. And like you said, it's a really big deal that they've had really good numbers this quarter, especially with what's going on. A couple of them that were off, there's still growth, but the ones that were off by a pretty substantial number there is search ads. That's off where the growth has usually been, has been double digits. Last quarter, it fell down. It was just up 6%. This quarter, it's fallen down to up just 1%. So that's a quite a bit of a hit. And they took another big hit too on Windows OEM stuff. But I mean, everything else from server products and services to anything cloud related, all the growth numbers are still up in the 25s, 13, 15% growth from the previous quarter. It's even dynamic.
Azure, GitHub and server products up 27% to $12.28 billion. That's crazy.
It really is. It really is. So it's good numbers. They did.
I mean, their stock has barely suffered, right? It's, as of recording, it's at $179.32. And its 52-week high is $190. So it's 10 bucks off its... And that's its all-time high, in fact, right? It's never been higher than 190, even if including stock splits and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. It took a hit of about 30 or 40 points during in March when this went through. I think the lowest that it hit was about $135 a share. But, I mean, you're still looking at, you know, that's back up to right now. It's at basically 180 bucks a share right now. Even off with that hit, it's back to its February numbers. Not all the way up to its January numbers, which were, what was this? Their peak was about the high 180s. But
190. Yeah. So here's an interesting observation. During the dot-com boom, right, for those of us who remember that period, back in 99/early 2000s, right, or early 2000, I should say, on December the 1st, 1999, Microsoft was at $58 adjusted, right, for splits and other things. And that was its all-time high for the preceding 10 years, basically. And you could tell that because I joined in 2002 and then it went nowhere for 10 years.
Well done, CJ.
Yeah, so there is this flat period of stock. That's when I was there. But but just think about that. Like, dot-com boom, it hit 58 bucks and now we're at 180, basically. On constant dollars, right? So stock adjusted and all that, split adjusted. Amazing.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
I mean, they've created so much value since then, of course, it makes sense, but just insane to think about. Like, everybody thought the dot-com bubble was as big as a bubble could get, right? And we've moved well past that.
Yeah. So moving on, I have some other news that I wanted to share. And I found this...
This is a doozy.
This really is. This is a doozy. Now, let me preface this, that this is just a good story right now because everything is fixed and there's no problem anymore, okay? So the issue's been mitigated.
Yeah.
But an article came out earlier this week on April the 27th by a site called CyberArk. And it talks about a Teams vulnerability, Microsoft Teams vulnerability that was pretty damn impressive. If you want the full details of it, go read the article because CJ and I don't want to, we have a bunch of news we want to get through and we don't want to make this a crazy long show. But effectively what it was is that I could send you a message on Teams. So I have to somehow get into your org to be able to send you a message. But I can do that as a guest or whatever. I send you a message on Teams that has an image. When you request the image, when that image gets rendered on your machine, which you really don't request it. I mean, well, I guess you do technically, but you really just go look at the conversation. I have an ability to get an access token by you just requesting and viewing the image that I sent you. I can get your access token and then use that access token to call right back in and get other information from you about Teams, including resending that message as you to a bigger, more broadcasted, a bigger channel that everybody in the organization's in. And then when they look at it, I get their access tokens and I can get all their data as well.
It's crazy, isn't it? This was a shocker. But that, unlike the Zoom recent disclosures that were done in a non-safe manner by the researchers who found it, this person or this group of people, I'm not sure, they worked with Microsoft on it, disclosed it to them. Microsoft fixed the problem before they wrote it up. Now, the really interesting thing here is, so you know how you said somebody has to send you the message? What about this scenario? If they find, you know how there are inbound webhooks for Teams?
Mm-hmm.
You could have used those to get one of these messages rendering to people. So if you knew an inbound web, you'd have to know what an inbound webhook location was for a team,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you could send a message using the inbound webhook and it would render the image and then you own them, right? Now, the interesting thing for about how this worked, right, was it all came down to DNS, and the attackers were able to take over a subdomain. There were two that they managed to take over. One was data-dev.teams.microsoft.com. And the way that usually happens is, you know, you go create a website in Azure or something, and you set up your domain name, and you put a registration for this domain name in your DNS setup, and you point it either to, say, an IP address or a CNAME to something else in Azure, right? It could be like acsawesomewebsite.azurewebsites.net, right? And then that company is no longer using that site and they delete the site out of Azure. I can now go in and create a new website called acsawesomewebsite.azurewebsites.net. And suddenly, data-dev.teams.microsoft.com is pointing at my website,
mm-hmm.
right? So now I own the website running on a Microsoft.com domain name, right? Which is, you know, we're getting into sketchy territory, right? But that's really what this all boils down to. Because the way that Teams works is you send an image into it, served from one of those locations, right? So when Teams renders it, it requests it from that Microsoft.com, that Teams.microsoft.com location, and Teams sends with it your auth cookie because it's on a subdomain that cookie is okay with.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you got that cookie, that auth cookie, then they found you could swap that auth cookie for effectively a JWT token, a different type of authentication token,
mm-hmm.
to use with Teams to go send messages and do all these other privileged activities. And so it all boiled down to that DNS entry. And actually, Microsoft suffered from this before. I can't remember what products it was, but there was another product that had the same attack vector with these orphaned DNS entries and people taking them over on your domain name.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
It really is crazy. Crazy stuff, man.
So, I mean, it's funny how they managed to string these series of quite discreet but important pieces together to really get an end-to-end attack, right?
I wonder how they come up with this stuff. Like, I mean, some of the stuff you just stumble across. But I wonder how do you actually come up with these,
yeah.
you find these things? I mean, is it just a fantastic imagination? Is it, how are they coming up with that stuff? But this is is one that as you read it, you're like, it makes sense. But like, I never would have thought of this.
How did you, right. I guess they start looking at network traces and kind of just start looking at how the app actually works and then see what's in each request and be like, that image has got an auth cookie request on it, a cookie that's being sent. I wonder what that cookie is. And fascinating.
What's this button do?
Yeah.
In a much less impressive thing, you see that Microsoft Word has finally shut down the debate. Now, which that's what they say, but this has been the generally accepted technical writing style that you don't use two spaces after a period. You just don't do, as somebody that does a lot of technical writing, it drives me crazy when I see emails come across like this or when I see technical docs do this.
I know.
It just pisses
me. I'm the opposite. I'm the opposite. Like, it drives me crazy when I don't see it because, like, I'm so used, my eyes are so used to reading sentences and with extra spacing for a new sentence that I really prefer it, but I understand why,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, we shouldn't need the two spaces anymore. I totally get that. Fonts are now, like, what is it, proportionally spaced or whatever you call it, right? It's not fixed width anymore. In the old days of typewriters, you used to have to put, like, two spaces with fixed width because fonts and things couldn't adjust for that stuff,
mm-hmm.
like modern word processors or modern spacing does. So I totally understand the reason why I still like two spaces, but it's just because I've done it forever. It's kind of like tabs versus spaces, four spaces versus two, parentheses on the same line as your if statement or the line below. Like, there's all these sort of...
I get it.
Syntactic. It's not syntax because the syntax is the same, but it's got style.
Yeah.
Style debates, right?
Yeah.
But now it's official. Word's changed it. So whether you like it or not, the debate's over.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll automatically fix it.
Yes. Yes. I'm more than willing to say that I'm wrong on this because Word has now changed its tune.
This podcast is brought to you by Raygun.
Raygun provides full stack, error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers due to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time that you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your code base, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experience of your users. And we're back. Okay, I have two quick Microsoft 365 things. If you haven't picked up on this, Microsoft has officially changed the name from Office 365 to Microsoft 365. Which, whatever, makes sense. I've changed it in my head. Problem is now is I have a whole bunch of...
I still go to office365.com to log in.
There you go. I go to mail.office365.com to check my mail. There are two updates that we have here, or there's one update and then there's one kind of what's new I want to share with you. This goes along with the roadmap ID from Microsoft 365, 57213. You're going to start seeing over the next couple months, you're going to see Planner inside of Microsoft Teams is going to be renamed to Tasks. But to make sure there's no confusion, they are going to give it a interim name change to be called Tasks by Planner in To-Do. And then eventually that will change to just Tasks. I swear to God, these marketing people and they're changing names and stuff, it's not only bad normally at Microsoft, but now send them home to work from home and they got, and now it seems like they have more time to kind of like come up with different ideas. And what do you get?
Clutching defeat from the jaws of victory.
I mean,
seriously, what the hell? Oh dear.
Whatever. The other thing that I have for you is there's an article that they,
you can totally tell how this has happened, right? This is just political BS, right? This is, well, we're going to ultimately move to Tasks, but that means the Planner team would be upset. So we have to say Tasks by Planner. But really, it's not just Planner. They're also from To-Do. So maybe we should call them Tasks by Planner and To-Do. Until we reorg the whole organization and we stuff the Planner and the To-Do team together, and then they'll feel better about it because now they're just the Tasks team. That's how I can see this happening behind the scenes. Anybody listening who knows about this, any Microsofties out there who've got insight into this, come on. Am I right? Feels like
it's a drinking game. Oh, man.
Seriously.
All right, moving on. We also have an article about what's new in Microsoft Teams in April 2020. The big headline there is a meetings dashboard, which, of course, everyone's loving this week or loving this month because it's allowing them to see very easily how many minutes they're using, which compared to previous months is significantly higher because of what's going on with the whole work from home and coronavirus thing and people finding that, yep, that meeting really just couldn't have been an email. We still have to hold it, and here we go.
For me, the big feature that really drove our customers mad for a long time was the inability to turn off what happens when people set their picture through Teams. Right? So despite all of the org policy that you can set around a person's ability to set their picture and where from, Teams didn't do that. And now they're finally adopting and recognizing the mailbox policy you set in Outlook, which is kind of considered the central place that this is set. So you will be able to turn off the ability to mess with your photo in Teams through that policy.
Very cool.
Which will stop people uploading cat photos outside of corporate guidelines and instead will let them update their profile pictures through Hyperfish instead. Just saying. Anyway.
No bias or anything there, right?
No bias there. Yeah, exactly.
I have three bits of Azure news before we move on to our picks. Let me run through these three things pretty quick and let you jump in and say anything you like.
Sounds good.
First one is Microsoft is announcing the general availability of Windows Server containers and private clusters for AKS, for Azure Kubernetes Service. That's a nice big update to AKS that people have been waiting for. In addition, related to AKS, Microsoft Services is now an official Kubernetes certified service provider. So if you're still interested in Kubernetes, you can see they're now an official, Microsoft Services is now an official certified service provider. Now,
interesting.
For you developers that are out there, there is an update to Azure Cognitive Search. This is, seems simple, right? But it's one of these things that seems like we should have had this before, but We didn't have it until now. So here it is. Apparently now we can do incremental enrichment of our search indexes. Before, we had to do a full index. I use this and I bet you always, every time I do an update on my site, I'd have to send a message over using their REST API and say, re-index my site. And it would be a full index. It would have to be a full rebuild of all the skills and all that stuff. It's not a big deal because I'm just always letting Azure do all the work of making those updates. But now it can do an incremental update. It allows me to have granular controls over the index as well, to be able to say if I want to do a full index or if I just want to say, just look for the new stuff that's changed in the format that I send you and then just re-index those things and update the skills that are affected by it as needed. So it's a bit of a performance update.
Yeah, gotcha. Very cool.
Yep. So that's all the news. That's some of the there's a bunch of other stuff, obviously, that Microsoft has been releasing for Azure, but I thought that those were three of the big things that we wanted to highlight today.
Yeah, nice. Nice.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show. All right, CJ, time for the fun stuff. You got a pick for us this week?
Oh, do I have a pick.
Ooh.
It is titled Giant Lego Star Destroyer with Full Interior, 35,000 pieces.
Oh my God.
This guy has built a Star Destroyer out of Lego. You can go watch the video. It's got three interior levels all fitted out, right? So like not to scale, obviously, I don't think, but all with minifig scale inside with all sorts of different interiors like bunk rooms, like meeting rooms, control rooms, the brig, like all sorts of stuff. And it's amazing. And it all opens up and he takes it all apart and gives you a tour of all the different levels. Not only that, that's his biggest one, but he's also done two others that he shows off as well of different sizes. And it's just like mind-boggling. It must have taken him years.
My God, look at this. He's even got like, you can even see guys sitting down having coffee at a little table in there.
Yep. Yep. So just when you thought you had a big Lego set?
Nope.
Yep.
Man.
This guy just dropped like a 35,000 piecer. Yeah. Apparently he started from two of the official Star Destroyer sets and scaled up from there.
Did you see, as part of this video, he actually has an Imperial shuttle that fits inside of it that can slide out. Holy moly.
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. The other ones have got like TIE fighters that go inside them.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Oh, my God. This is too awesome.
And they're not small.
No.
They're not small either. Like, these things are huge. Like, the size of this 35,000 piecer is probably, I don't know, it's not 6 feet long, but it's maybe four and a half feet long. I mean, it's pretty big.
My God, look at this. It's got like these little bays that, this is impressive. So if anybody, make sure you get into like the 16 minute mark. Oh my God, this is too cool. It's got, oh my God, look at the bunk rooms. Wow. Good find, CJ.
Insane, huh?
Well done. We did one of our first quarantine projects. We went and sorted all Lego that we have into multiple bins. We have every piece that is two studs or smaller. They're all in one bin, or they're all in like three bins. All minifig and minifig related stuff. We have all pieces that are the equivalent of three studs or more of multicolor in multiple bins. Then we have the same bins for gray, white, and black. Different shades of gray, all that goes in one bin, but it's like kind of have all those things separate.
50 shades?
Yeah, we got about 50 shades.
Probably 50 shades of gray.
And then we have three bins of like unique wheels and unique stuff. And
yeah.
So I went and I actually found the instruction manual for my very first set from 1984. And
oh wow.
And then I found a thing that has the inventory of all the pieces, and I'm about 80% of the way of finding every piece that I need to rebuild my old school castle set that I hope to be able to do that this weekend. So I'm getting close.
Wow, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah. Fun.
Epic. Nice work.
Yeah. That was fun.
What do you got for us this week?
I got something kind of fun. So in all the negative and bad news and all this crap that's going on in the world today because of the coronavirus, I'm going to screw his name up. John Krasinski, I think is right.
Yeah.
From the fame of the actor from Jack Ryan. Sorry, Jack. He's Jack Ryan in, well, he's in
the TV series.
The TV series on Amazon Prime. He's also John? No. What's his name on The Office?
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh, that's terrible. My son's watching it right now. Oh man, everybody's going to laugh. We're going to start getting all these tweets and stuff. It's like, I totally know who this guy is too. We don't need you to chime in. I'll figure it out way before you see this. But anyway, he has gotten together with his kids and he's created a YouTube channel called Some Good News, SGN. And people post stuff from all over. He's got 5 different episodes on here. He held a special prom for seniors that were missing their prom this year because schools are all closed. The most recent one that he did, which this was great, episode 5. Have you watched any of these? It's worth it.
No.
It's good stuff. The most recent one they did is episode 5. And what he did is he had people submit recipes for things that they had been making. And so not only had they submitted recipes in, what he did is he got some celebrity chefs to come in and to take their recipes and make them himself. So he got Martha Stewart got in to do somebody's, it's called the SGN potluck, but Stanley Tucci jumped in, David Chang jumped in, Martha Stewart jumped in, Guy Fieri jumped in. He did this awesome big sandwich that they made. He's been raising money for the Restaurant Relief Fund. And Pepsi jumped in and donated another $3 million to get him over $20 million as a donation. It's a lot of fun to watch.
That's awesome.
It's uplifting stuff, but it's hilarious. Some of the stuff he's doing is absolutely hilarious. So it's really good.
Nice. I'll definitely go check that out.
Yeah, they're good.
I thought you were about to say, got Martha Stewart to step in and do somebody else's jail time.
No. But that would have been okay. Fun.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So a little bit of fun stuff and all the badness that's going on in the world today.
Yeah, we need it, man. We need it.
Yeah, we do. Cool. All right, dude. Good to see you again.
Yeah, likewise.
We will wrap this up.
Catch you next week.
We will see everybody next week.
Laters.
Later.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.